I started to think about, like, is this organization going in the way that I want to be part of? There were some things that I really loved. There were other things that maybe I was starting to question a little bit. But I think it was that you've got to take risks in your life. You can't just live with certainty. If you don't take a risk, you never grow. And so I think that's what drove me to really look outside. And I did. And I can remember when I first started my next job, I was like, what have I done? What have I done? Because it's really hard when you go into a new organisation.
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I am Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Hey, great to have you listening to this week's episode. If you don't take risks, you will never grow, which is why I left my job after 12 years. This is the title of the episode with Rita Tran, who's coming from an Indian family and being born and based in the UK. Today, she's a business transformation expert, an author, speaker, and the founder of Dare Worldwide. Rita has held many executive positions in her field of expertise, which is human resources. You see her work being featured on BBC, Financial Times, Forbes, and the CEO World magazine. And in this interview, she shares some inspiring insights from her professional journey. Hear how she got around her field of expertise, which she calls her passion, without having had a career plan in place, and making it to the role of a chief HR officer of a Fortune 200 company. Rita shares how the three questions, do I really enjoy the work, am I learning something new, and am I making a difference in some way, lead her through that journey of shaping her career on the go. How she made it through a midlife crisis, asking herself, what am I going to do now, and what next step she set, she's telling us. Very interesting as well is to learn what it meant to her starting her own business without a team, being a person who gets energy from being with others. She shares with us how she faces moments of self-doubt and constraining beliefs like, is that the right thing and am I the right person? Do I need to do something differently? And how she does not let them stop her. We talk about failure, corporate culture, key development experiences, and building a personal brand. Ready? Here she is. Rita, hello and welcome.
Hi, I'm glad to be on your podcast today.
And I am glad as well, having someone like you here, having an own podcast as well. So you're the professional, and let's see how it feels for you being on the other side now, which I don't think I could ever say yes to that. So I'm very happy to have you here now.
Well, thank you very much. And I think I've listened to your podcast and you are a true professional. So I'm honored to be on your show.
I have a red head now. Thank you. No one sees that. That's good. Rita, in the intro, I've covered a couple of the key infos on your professional background. But to give our listeners a better picture about you as a person, why don't you tell us, who is Rita Tran?
So I guess I'm a bit of a maverick. That's probably a good way to describe me, in the sense that I'm always pushing for something new and different. So that's kind of me, really. I am the daughter of immigrants who came to the UK from India back in the very early 60s. I was born in London. I am passionate. I'm lucky, I guess, that my passion is actually my career. So I started my career in HR. And didn't know that was the career that I was going to do, but it's the career I ended up with, and I absolutely love it. Although it's expanded, I guess my view of HR or human resources is much broader than most people would think about it. Maybe some people would think about it, I should say. So I have found my passion in sort of transformation, change, and strategy, really. And so that's where I spend most of my time today. I've been in the corporate world. I now run my own business, and yeah, try to share lots of learning. So I guess that's me in a nutshell. I'm married, no kids, no pets.
thank you for this intro. And you've just mentioned that, yeah, you what you're doing right now. And it sounded like there was not a clear plan that actually that you had and followed in order to find your path. But how did you then get around this field of expertise?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think I always knew that I wanted to do something in business. I'd grown up in a business family. My parents owned their own retail stores. And as young children, we always worked in them. I often talk about and share that story because I said I think I was about six when my parents first put me outside the store with a little bag. And I'd be selling socks to people. I think they felt sorry for me as a six-year-old. And so they would buy them. And I think they would call that, you know, I don't know what they would call that these days, but I always had a love for business. So I always knew it would be something to do with business. So I didn't know it was going to be HR. So I kind of fell into that career. But from that moment that I started my profession, I realized just how much you get to see about what goes on in a business, because you see all angles of the business. You get to not just understand the HR piece, but everything from strategy to operations to stakeholders. So I think that's what really intrigued me, and I was constantly learning. And, and that's another thing that's really important to me, that I'm constantly learning or doing something new and different. Did I ever think I was going to be the chief HR officer of a Fortune 200 company? No, never in a million years. It was not something I desired. I never measured my career by the positions that I got. It was always around, am I enjoying it? Am I learning something new? Am I making a difference in some way or fashion? So when I was offered the job of chief human resources officer, I think when my ex-boss told me, I think I was like, I don't want that job. Why do I want that job? I want to be actually doing the stuff, not sitting there pontificating about it. But actually, when I took it on, I realized just how important a role it was and how much more sort of influence I could have in that role and show people what HR really could be as a business partner, as a strategy advisor, as a conduit really for the business. So I loved it. I didn't think I would ever be a consultant, but there you go. I ended up being a consultant. My husband said I had a midlife crisis. I think I just realized that I had got to a stage where I was so passionate about what I wanted to do. And I'm a bit of a change junkie. And I'd been in an organization where we'd gone through massive transformation in the 9 or 10 years that I was there. And I thought, what am I going to do now? Because like all the tough stuff seems like it's done. Now, clearly it wasn't.
What's next?
I'm sure like my colleagues after I left had lots more to do. But for me, it felt like that was a good time to sort of transition to do something else. So I took some time out. To be honest as well, I was really tired. I'd been working very, very long hours, and I was getting really close to burnout, and I knew that I had to do something different with my life if I was going to change that. So I took some time out. I did a lot of pro bono work. So I coached HR professionals, mainly chief HR officers, who were working in the development country space, because having my last job was in the energy industry, and I got to see the importance of energy to economic development in developing countries. And so I was quite passionate about what could I do to help support the work that was being done in development countries so that they could become more sustainable, become more sustainable on their own. And so I did a lot of that, and I decided to invest in a startup that was trying to bring broadband internet access to Africa. Because it's an area in remote parts of Africa, because for me it was that, you know, I had a view at that time, I still do, that access to the internet is the next basic human right after sort of water and energy, because it opens up a world of possibilities for individuals and for countries. So I was really passionate about that, and I love working with them. They had come from a non-profit background, had done lots of work in developing countries, and were really passionate about bringing broadband internet access to Africa. Been with them for several years, sat on their board, was an advisor. They had just been bought out by another company. They did some work with Facebook. So it was great, and I realized, and I got to see firsthand the trials and tribulations that startups have. So. And then I decided it was time for me to start my own business. So I did. I was in the middle of writing a book at that time. And yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. I then ended up commuting to Australia very often.
Wow.
Sometimes I spend like 12 days there and then 10 days back in the UK doing a temporary chief HR officer role to help find the next successor for that position. They were going through a massive transformation, so I was doing a lot of transformation and change work with them as a consultant and then joined them for a short time permanently, then came back to the UK and decided that my company needed, when I first started my company, it was my name, Rita Trahan, which is my maiden name, even though I've been married for more than 20 years. But I decided that it needed to be more than me because the company had grown a little bit by that time as well. It wasn't just me. And so I thought long and hard about the name of the company, and I decided to call it DARE because I wanted people to dare to think differently, dare to see things differently, dare to believe that there were different ways of doing things and really challenging the status quo. And I passionately believe that today that is so important that companies, people, organizations really think differently to the way that we've been taught to think for years and years and years.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's actually what is needed in order to develop, to grow, and to make things happening, making change happening. Thanks for running us through that. I mean, it's a lot that you have done, and thanks for giving us an overview about that. I'm just thinking, I mean, you've mentioned a timeout that you took. You have changed industries, so there were a lot of phases of change. Was there a time when you had a bit of doubt or felt, maybe insecure about the next step or being on the right path?
Oh, sure. You know, I think starting your own business for a start is really hard. You don't have the infrastructure around you that you have in a big corporate organization. And you suddenly realize, like, wow, I've got to do all these things myself. Like, where do I go? What do I do? How do I do this? So there's all of that. And then there's obviously the feelings like, well, would this really work? Is it going to be sustainable? Is it going to, you know, challenge me enough? And not having to manage a team was particularly hard for me in the beginning and made me sort of think about, you know, is this the right thing for me to be doing? Because I'm, you know, I get my energy, I guess, from being with people. Mm-hmm. And so that was quite hard. And I think everyone, I believe, probably has their own insecurities about those things. I still have them today sometimes when I'm looking at the future and saying, well, will this idea of mine ever get sort of traction or thought leadership? So yeah, there have been times when I've felt like that and started to question, you know, is this the right thing? Am I the right person? Do I need to do things differently? That self-reflection is kind of important in some ways. I try not to let it stop me. I try not to let what I call those constraining beliefs, which sometimes get into our head, stop me.
And how do you manage to do that?
Because I go back to what I passionately believe in, which is asking the questions, what if? What if I didn't think that? What could be possible? So I'm a great believer that anything's possible. It's a question of, like, how do you get there? So you have to look at lots of different ways to get there if you can't get there in the first round. And failure is important too. If you make a mistake, and I've made lots in my career, like not like lots and lots and lots, but enough to the ones that resonate with you and you learn from them. So mistakes and failures are painful as they may be at the time. They're massive learning opportunities, which I hope in the main I try to learn from.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you're constantly learning, that you're trying out new things. And in the end, it's these challenges and new things that we try and make us leave our comfort zone and make us grow in the end. I mean, I feel like dancing at the borders of my comfort zone regularly these days, I have to admit. What would you say was the most important development experience, be it professionally or personally, that had an impact on your life?
Yeah, I think there's probably two things that come to mind. The first was actually going to university, because at 16, I had decided I'd had enough with school. You know, what did I need? At that time, I felt I just wanted to go out and work. My brother and sister at the time had stayed on at school and done their, you know, A-levels. So I don't know what the equivalent is around that globally. There are lots of different, I guess, terms for it, but it's essentially the qualification before you go to university. I decided at 16 I had enough. Wasn't going to do that. I was going to go out and get a job. I actually didn't. I went to a local college studied my A-levels and ended up at university. Never something that I thought I would ever do. Mm-hmm. But that was quite a turning point, I guess, an experience for me, because I come from an Indian family that were relatively strict, in fact, quite strict at the time, and I'd left home. And I suddenly met all of these people that had come from really different backgrounds and really different experiences. And that had a big impact on me at looking at possibilities that maybe I hadn't thought of at the time. And it encouraged me to pursue the career that I did. So that was obviously, like, you know, life-changing from that perspective. If I had not done that, who knows where I'd be today. The second, I think, has been working for really, really difficult leaders. I can remember one in particular that I was asked to take on. And actually, he had a brilliant mind. But when I was asked to become his HR, I guess, leader for a global business, I remember saying to my boss at the time, nobody has survived more than 2 months with this guy. So clearly, this is a signal to me that maybe the company wants me to leave. And I'd only been there a very short time. I think I'd been there about a month and a half. And he just, like, maybe it was a bit longer, maybe 3 months, I think. And he just laughed and he said, if anybody can, like, handle him, you can. I was like, okay. My first interaction was with this guy was when I went up. He was grabbing a coffee and I smiled and I said, hi, Joe. Like, great to meet you. I'm sure you wouldn't mind me mentioning his name. And he just looked at me and he turned and he said, oh, you're the one that tried to take one of my people and offer them up for another role within the company. And I was, And I was like, okay, well, that's not a great start. Anyway, I learned a lot from him, and I hope he learned some things from me, because he had a really brilliant mind. He had some characteristics which were I call derailment characteristics, which I would spend a lot of time coaching him on. And I think that often I would stand up to him that a lot of people wouldn't. And not only did that make me stronger because I was prepared to do it, but I think it also gave other people courage to sort of challenge him when they didn't agree with him. So I learned at that time for myself that as an individual, I needed to be strong about things that I was really passionate about or believed in or principles that I felt were important. And we actually became good friends. I still keep in contact with him. And, you know, he's doing a brilliant job where he is now. So he's born to be a leader, I think, and just doing some different things. So that was a life-changing experience for me, I guess. I've got loads of them, like leaving and going to the consulting world. I mean, that was a massive learning curve.
Imagine. Is there anything specific that you want to highlight here for our listeners?
Oh, I think the one thing that I really encourage people to do is really invest in their personal brand. I think when I worked in the corporate world, I was pretty well known within the field of HR because of the work that we had done in the company and the team had done within the company, really. But I was working, most of my life was at work. So I didn't really invest in things like LinkedIn or networking or associations. I just didn't. And then I left and I was like, wow, like, what do I do now? Like, who do I talk to? How do I kind of rethink what I want to do? So, you know, I invested in that stuff and I'm glad that I did, because I think it's really important. And particularly in this day and age, having a personal brand, like, what do you stand for as an individual? Mm-hmm. Really important.
Yeah. What would you recommend someone who now catched fire and thinks like, hey, this is something I need to work on? What would be a recommendation for someone who would like to give it a go?
I would say professionally, do look at LinkedIn, because it is the kind of professional tool that most people use, and make sure that your LinkedIn profile really reflects who you are, what you do, and the experience that you've had, because that's your route into a lot of associations and groups. And there are some fantastic groups on LinkedIn that you can be part of, not just so that you can get something from it, but that you can also give back. So be prepared, if you are going to invest in your personal brand, to give as well as get. It shouldn't just be a one-way process. You can also keep up to date with lots of things that are going on globally in areas of interest for you through different groups that LinkedIn offers. So I think that's a great way to have enhance your personal brand. look at the associations and organisations that exist in your community. How can you get involved in the ones that you're passionate about? And if you're like me, I was never a great one for joining lots of groups because I felt like, look, if I don't really connect with these people, then this is not good for me because I know they're going to find that really obvious. I'm not very good at like masking how I feel about things. So I was really diligent about the sort of organisations or network associations that I joined and did my due diligence on them. So I'd encourage people to do that and find groups because, as I said, you meet some great people, you get to learn a lot of different things, you get to help others. Yeah, it's good. I use Twitter as well. I find Twitter a good way to connect with people. So,
okay, being open to these kind of platforms and making use of them in a way, like really proactively using them and being out there with curiosity and interest.
Sounds
like a good plan. Rita, you also have mentioned culture, differences in culture a moment ago. And I was just thinking that besides many things, you are also an expert on workplace culture. Mm-hmm. And I have clients and also I have experienced it myself when changing companies that initially it might have seemed like the perfect fit and perfect job opportunity, but arriving there and really getting to know their corporate culture might then give you the feeling of not being right here or that it's just not that it's just different than what you have expected. With your expertise mm-hmm. in this field from the company perspective, what would you answer someone asking you about a good way to figure out more about the corporate culture and of a possible next employer to know if it's really a good fit to them?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think companies today have to be really clear about what their company culture is for a number of reasons. We are seeing more and more people aligning themselves to organisations that have a greater purpose. What is their higher purpose? And I often work with organisations to help them think that through. It's not just about making profit and giving returns to investors. There is a recognition that companies have to have a higher calling than that. So they have to be really clear about what their higher purpose is and then make sure that that is really reflected in what they actually do. So what they say and what they do are really clearly aligned. So anybody looking to join an organisation, I often say, go read up on them. Go read what analysts have to say about mm-hmm. the company, how they're doing, what they're doing. Go read up on the bios of the leadership team. Do they sound like leaders that have had good track records that if you read some of their speeches or hear them speak, does their philosophy and their approach resonate with you? No, look at people's ratings of a company. You can go on, I don't know, Glassdoor or loads of other sites where you can actually look at past employees and current employees' comments about a company. Now, I would say, use that data wisely because it's only a piece of data. It's not all the data, but it gives you some insight. Mm-hmm. Do some informational interviewing. Go find people that work at the company and invite them for a coffee and say, hey, just want to have a chat, find out what makes you want to work here. Why do you like it? What don't you like? Ask lots of questions during the early stages of the interview process, particularly around things that are important to you, that you know you need to be successful. Mm. I'll give you examples of, when I worked at AES, we were a company that at the time did not have lots of structure, systems or processes. So I would often say to individuals that were coming for interviews, if you like working in an environment that has lots of ambiguity to it, that doesn't have a lot of structure and where you have to get your hands dirty, really, because there isn't a lot of resources. So that means you having to do lots of things that you may not have, that somebody else might have done in the past, then this is the right company for you. If you want lots of structure, if you want lots of support, if you want lots of resources, this is definitely not the right company for you. There are lots of those companies out there which you will be successful at, but this isn't it. And I would try to be honest with people as to what they were coming into because it's a two-way, two-way street. You want to make the right decisions. And I think the biggest challenge companies have today is really walking the talk. So, and investing in their culture and seeing that culture is not just some soft thing because it's not. It's what really makes a company successful or not.
And as you've just said, it's a two-way street. I mean, applying for a job and having an interview also means that the company is presenting itself to you, and you also have the choice to say no in the end, or just to evaluate if this is a good fit or not, and asking the right questions to find that out once you're sitting there with them. I think that's also sometimes something that at least I see that people forget, that also they are, kind of...
Right. It's a two-way interview. That's the way to describe it. It's a two-way interview.
Thanks for, to me, not being a native speaker. Thank you, Rita. but I think it's just important to be aware of that, that it's also an opportunity for yourself. Back to you and your personal life and your experiences. And you also do coaching. So one thing that I always see as a very interesting element in career-based coaching is to look at what success actually means for my client. And it's a word in the end. It's a word that we give a meaning and that not necessarily is created from our inside. It comes from outside, from belief sentences, from external expectations. And I actually remember one client of mine who was so focused on the next promotion, which for her meant being successful. And she was unhappy at work now, considering to leave the company because the next career step was not in sight. And yeah, nothing was happening. So we started working on her core values, trying to identify them and reflecting on them. And then she was so surprised that the value success, in a way that she actually put the meaning to it, until that day was not showing up at all in the work we did. And then she realized that what it really was that gave her a feeling of a successful life was nothing in particular that she got from the role or the job in general. But she could actually source that from many other parts of her life and from there develop herself. And as this might also change throughout a career and life, how did you define success before rising to a top executive position and now after getting there?
Success for me is about being able to make a difference, even if it's only just a very small difference within the company, within a person. But that's what success looks like for me, seeing some sort of change or transformation happen, even if it's really small. That is what makes me really passionate and gets me excited about what I do and where I go.
Did it change over time?
No, I don't think so. Not really. I think it's always been that. Maybe it has advanced to be more about bigger groups or bigger people, like, you know, bigger organizations or different people in different stages of their careers. I think that has been important. I think I also define success as doing something that I love. You know, the day that I stop enjoying what I'm doing is the day that I say, this is enough, I need to do something different. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what I look at. And, you know, I often say to people, like, it's interesting. I say, like, it's always easier to sort of be the advisor and say that to other people than it is to, like, actually do the work themselves. But I do say to people, like, what is your purpose? Like, what is your personal purpose? Why do you, you know, what do you exist for? And for me, that's about bringing about change.
Yeah, and making change possible with the work you do, like you were just describing. Yeah. I read also that you were stating somewhere that viewing the business through the lens of capacity is the only way to win, which actually in the end also leads to success. If so, where could you see the transfer to this approach in regards to individuals?
I think it actually starts with individuals and then sort of, you know, moves up. So it's sort of like, how do you build individual capacity and then how do you build workplace capacity is the summation, if you like.
Mm-hmm. But for an individual person, I mean, this transferring this on an individual person, not as an employee, but rather than individually looking at him or herself?
Yeah, so I think it starts with being really clear about what your purpose is, number one. Are you really clear about what you think and you believe is what you want to do? The second, I think, is being really clear about what your core values are. So what are the values that are really important to you? Because they lead you, drive you to pursue and do things that resonate with who you are as a person. So I think that's really important in terms of building your capacity. Then I think it's about really harnessing the things that you're really good at. And spending some time really thinking about those. Like, what am I really good at that I really enjoy? The fourth, I think, is probably about dealing with those constraining beliefs, because we all have them, but they often stop us from doing, pursuing whatever it is that we want to do in our life, whether that's a career, whether that's personally. You know, throughout our life, we often are the product of like experiences that we've had. So I encourage people to say, like, look at what those constraining beliefs are and then turn them on their head. Say, what's the opposite of that? So that you start to really think about that. And then start to think about, it's becoming an overused word now, I realize, but it's something that I really resonate with and do a lot of work around with companies, which is what's my ecosystem? Who's in my ecosystem today? And an ecosystem is the culmination of all those individuals or organizations or mechanisms that we use to make us better, that we can leverage, and but again, both give and get from. So who are your ecosystems, right? Who are the people that you go to give you tough love? Who are the people that you go to when you just need someone to listen but not to actually give you advice? Who do you go to expand your thinking? So those are the kinds of things I encourage people to do, to think about themselves in building their capacity.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of what you've just mentioned actually is perfect in order to take decisions in regards to the next step or a general career and life path. And I read, I think it was on your website, you said, "We refuse to play safe. Our passion comes from not being afraid to challenge traditions." And looking at your own professional journey, yeah, what would you say was the hardest decision that you ever had to make?
I think it was actually leaving my first job. So I left university and went to work for Honeywell International, which was a great career move. And I was there for about, I think, 12 years.
Which is a long time.
And it was a great, I had great experiences. I got to, you know, rise up the ranks very quickly. I had great leaders that I worked for. We actually went through massive transitions where we were nearly acquired by GE, and then we weren't, and then we merged with Allied Signal, which was another massive global company. So I had some great experiences there, but I got to a point where I thought, am I actually doing well here because I know everybody now, or am I actually quite good at some of the things that I like doing? And that decision to leave was really tough, because it was like a comfort zone, right? It was my little home. And
yeah, what helped you? What helped you then to actually take this decision or reflect on it in a way that it helped you knowing what next step to take?
So again, it comes back to like personal values. I started to think about like, is this organization going in the way that I want to be part of? There were some things that I really loved. There were other things that maybe I was starting to question a little bit. They had often asked me to come and live abroad. And in fact, just before I left, they asked me again, which was, you know, I felt very privileged about that. But I think it was that you've got to take risks in your life. You can't just live with certainty. If you don't take a risk, you never grow. And so I think that's what drove me to really look outside. And I did. And I can remember when I first started my next job, I was like, what have I done? What have I done? Because it's really hard when you go into a new organization. You said earlier, when you don't really know anybody, where you've been used to, I guess, knowing who to talk to or have your networks around you, and suddenly you've got to build that all over again. Yeah. And I joined a company that actually had no HR, none whatsoever. Mm-hmm. 27,000 person organization that had no HR.
Oh my God, really?
But they hated HR. So it was, I wouldn't say hated, but they didn't have a belief or a desire to have HR. Now that changed obviously when some HR people were brought in. But I mean, if it was going to take a challenge, I certainly didn't take an easy one. And, you know, I didn't regret that at all either. I've grown so much from that experience. I've got lots of scars from it too, but we all do, right? Those are the biggest learning points. So,
and you just said you're not regretting this step. Was there any other decision that maybe on a personal or professional side that you, or any other thing that you regret doing or not doing?
I think sometimes I regret not taking care of my own personal health as much as I should have done. And so I do try. I'm not very good at it because I am a bit of a work junkie. But I do think well-being is really, really important. And you'll see more and more of that coming to the surface in companies today, where people are talking about the need to take care of mental health as much as physical health. And I think if I look back, there were times when I should have, you know, cut back and I didn't. I'm not sure that's always good for my mental health. Mm. So that's, I try to now and do more about that. And I talk about it a lot to people.
In regards to that, is there something that is non-negotiable for you, staying in good health and taking care of yourself?
I think it's having that. It's about, for me personally, it's about giving myself tough love, because I will push myself to the edge. I know now when to stop. I know now when I go like, okay, this, like, you need to stop. You need to cut back, or you need to like let something go. You can't do everything. So I have to work at that. I have to work at that. And I have other people around me that then say, what are you doing? You need to stop. You need to take a break. You need to do this. And yeah.
I just took a look at the time, and it's unbelievable how fast it goes. I could actually continue for hours now talking to you. But I would like to close with one last question. Rita, mm-hmm. What is one question that you wish you would have asked yourself or a mentor earlier in life?
Yeah, I've always got like loads of questions I would have asked. I think if I hadn't have done HR and I hadn't gone to university, I think the question I would have asked is like, what could I have done with my life that would have helped create a bigger, I don't know, impact in life in general? Could I have done more to have some influence in life? I don't know. That's probably a question I would ask. What else could I have done?
And for anyone who's asking themselves this question now, based on your experience now and now knowing this is a question, how would you actually solve this, or how would you look for an answer yourself now?
Well, I think I've kind of done that a little bit for myself, I think, by really looking at what can I do that also has a social impact. As much as I have a love for business, I realize now more and more how important it is to have some social impact in the world today. You know, we live in a world that's constantly changing. There is a lot going on, and we've got an environment that's at risk. So trying to find ways to do things that give back is really important to me. So that's kind of my way of addressing it, I guess. I try and give back as much as I can to individuals and organizations. Yeah.
And from what I see, I think you're exactly doing that. Rita, thanks so much for spending your time with us. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you very much. It's hard being this side of the table, I have to say.
Rita, I hope to speak to you again soon.
We'll find a way to make that happen.
All the best and take care. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. If you enjoyed today's interview, I'm more than happy if you would sign up for my podcast on your individual podcast player, or Spotify, Apple, Android, or Google Podcast, Deezer, or TuneIn. I hope to have you here with me again soon. Warm regards from Düsseldorf in Germany.